just going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Right, okay, Filthy Shambles, Season 3, Episode 34. This is Spooky, and I'm joined by T'Trunk, a.k.a. Jack. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you getting on?
I'm all right. I've had 2 weeks off Twitter. I'm still off it, actually, technically speaking. And nice. I say off, I'm not reading my timeline, and I'm not replying and responding and posting threads and trying to validate why everything's okay and responding to the same arguments that I've seen a million times before. I am going on there to share the pod link. That's just about it. It's just a sabbatical.
You feeling better?
Yeah, I think so. But the problem is, mate, it feels like it's going to kick off where I sit in the South Stand. There's a weird energy there. There's one or two characters that are very snidey in their remarks. I think I did tweet after the Palace game, and I think I said that if anyone ever asks me who my least favourite fan base is, I'm always going to respond Tottenham. It's that thing. Do you know where you don't get on with your family, but they're your blood, and they're the ones that you're meant to love more than anyone else. I think with football supporters, when you're surrounded by Spurs fans, there's this thing that gets amplified. I'm not telling people don't moan at the football, don't behave in this way at the football. But fuck me, the guy right in front of me is he's a very unpleasant, negative person, not football supporter, but why go to games and try to antagonise the people around you? Like, why have that as your
example of how he does it?
First game of the season, I get my because I moved from the east stand and I moved to the south stand, so I get in my seat. And the guy behind me, he's lovely. I recognise someone else. From Glory Forum, and he's on Twitter, and I speak to him all the time. So I was like, okay, this is quite good. The two geezers right in front, though, are persistent standers. Is that a word? So standees. They stand persistently. And you got to ask them sometimes to sit down. And on that first game of the season, they were really taking the piss. And there was a couple next to me who had also moved to those two seats next to me with a season ticket holders who only lasted that one game. They moved again after that one game because these two characters, one of them turned around and looked down at them. This was like almost towards the end of the game when they were consistently standing up, and they turned around and said, they can watch it on Match of the Day. So there's this, which I know it was funny, but I thought, you mate, that's a bit wanky. Like, why do that? These people are going to be sat behind you all season long, except they're not. So anyway, they're behaving a little bit more with the standing and sitting down. It's quite funny that he turns around and has a pop at us, and then he'll start moaning about the lack of atmosphere in the south stand, and he points towards the drum. The irony is everybody in front of him, who he knows and who are obviously season ticket holders, he doesn't have a problem with everybody, the entire stand in front of him sitting down, but he'll turn around and have a dig at us because we've sat back down and he's still standing. And it's like, well, mate, I don't moan at you when you're on your phone tapping away in your chat groups, and I don't moan at you when you just shout out the most basic instructions to the players: get the ball forward, kick it, run. I mean, to be listening to that for like half a season, and those are the things you have to deal with, right? Because I'll probably say some pretty stupid things at the football, but it's just I thought, man, I got away from Twitter for 2 weeks, and I now can't get away from
Twitter from this.
However, it's just a caveat. This is quite funny because the person in front of him, maybe two rows down, who I don't know. I mean, he's very performative in terms of the way he moans, but it's funny. Apparently, Tottenham had a camera on him because they sent two stewards down and tried to have a conversation with him. And yeah, and the thing is, it was quite funny because he turned around to them and said, "I haven't even said the C word yet. Like, what have I done wrong?" And the thing is, the guy didn't actually say anything offensive. So, you know, that kind of made me think, am I moaning at someone who's moaning? Am I doing exactly what has pushed me away from Twitter? But then, obviously, I kind of rolled it back and thought, well, this guy's a bit of a wanker because I've tried with him. You know, when you score and you tend to hug everyone, we've had hugs with this geezer, but he doesn't give anything back after that, and it's fine. I don't need him to be my friend, but mate, you don't need to be snidey.
Did you grass him up, mate? Is this what you're? Is this
no. I don't listen.
Snitches get stitches, you know.
It would have to take a lot, you know. Listen, this is the thing about football fans, right? We all support the same team, but we're not on the same team. If anyone does a racism, they're going to get slapped. And that's probably, yeah, you know, the boundary. Anything else is up to you. I just have to suck it up, right? Or move. But I'm not going to do that. But the energy's not great. And it's almost like Twitter has followed me into the stands.
Where's that come from, though, mate? Like, because... I was asking you kind of at the top before we started recording this, I should say. There's that lad, I don't actually know who runs the account. I find him fairly inoffensive. That top feed, you know.
Yeah, I follow that account.
Yeah, he's so good. Seems like an all right lad, you know. And he sort of did this sort of sliding scale of where Tottenham fans are, which went from like happy to content to a little disappointed to, you know, I guess option D, which kind of didn't feel in keeping with the rest of them. But it says it feels like our season is basically done, which I think it kind of does a bit, but it doesn't mean I'm not happy with it. Do you know what I mean? But
so anyway, what were the options for the people listening to this who might not be on Twitter or seen it?
So he says, "Good morning, Spurs fans. Overall, how are you honestly feeling right now?"
Okay.
And he says, "A, happy. A decent start under Ange. B, content, doing better than I expected. C, a little disappointed after our great start where we are now. And D, it feels like our season is basically done." And I would say, I don't know.
Go on.
It makes it sound worse than it is, but I'd say I'm kind of like between B and C, really.
Right, yeah.
In that I'm content. I think it's good. I'm a little bit concerned with the sort of drop off in intensity and ideas and such in the past few games, but I do have in the back of my mind at all times, this is still just the start of a kind of work in progress, if you like. But in terms of the real sort of Aggie agitation, where's that coming from, mate, right now? Because I don't really get, I'll be honest, I haven't seen an awful lot. I've seen a bit of moaning on Twitter and stuff. And I do think people, this is no side eye at you, I'm just saying. I do think people police people moaning a little bit too much on Twitter. I think sometimes people lose sight of the fact that Twitter is just something at people's fingertips and they'll just say, "Oh, that was a load of bollocks, really annoyed."
Yeah,
and when you
fair.
See that in isolation, you don't know the person. Right. I'll put it to you this way. If you saw Flav or Ricky or somebody say load of bollocks, you'd be like, all right, that's just one of those two just having a bit of a moment or whatever. But when you don't know the person, you just see something like that in isolation. It gets you more pent up, doesn't it? Especially if you don't feel that way. You'll see them say something like that and you think, right, fuck off a bit.
Yeah.
But then I think there's a difference between that, people just having a bit of a moan about something that's going on, say on a match day or whatever, to these big overarching, and we all know them. We all know the accounts that do the, "I have had enough," and then 4 or 5 different tweets, or if they're a paid for blue person, have a big long kind of essay about how everything's falling to pieces and all that type of thing. I'll be honest, I haven't seen much of that yet. I haven't seen much of the really kind of angry stuff. A few little bits here and there saying, and it generally, I think it generally tends to be around the theme of, other Spurs fans who will accept this. I haven't really seen anybody go for Ange. A couple of people saying that I think he's been found out. But I don't. Is anyone that? But it seems from what you're saying, it sounds like people are getting quite pissy in the ground.
Yeah, I mean, at half time, I kind of dipped down to Beaver Town quickly and had a look around, and I saw a couple of likely lads who go home and away. Do you know what I mean? Proper Tottenham supporters. Everyone's a proper. If you support Spurs, you're a proper fan, right? Regardless of whether you can get to games or not. But these guys do go up and down the country. And they both kind of stood up and it was like a TED talk, and it was like, 2.5 games, we've played the same exact football for 2.5 games and he ain't working. And I was like, yeah, I actually agree with you. Like, there isn't an extra dimension to our play at the minute. We're not asking the right questions to our opponents and Palace, which we'll get on to, they were very ordinary on Saturday. And yet we couldn't break them down. So it was like, well, there's obviously a deeper conversation to have. And maybe these issues that we have at the minute with the lack of energy and the lack of kind of fluidity will be resolved over time, over a period of games. But in the moment, you know, people are reacting differently. Now, these guys no doubt will have celebrated like everyone else when we kind of came back and won 3-1. I guess it's, again, it's like me moaning about the guy moaning all the time, right? It gets on my tits a little bit because it's like you're moaning because that's how you're dealing with the frustration. And I get that. I might sit there in silence and just internalize everything. But in reality, what do you actually think? And that conversation isn't digestible for social media. It's probably something you could do face to face with someone, with any given person on Twitter, if you could have that 5 minutes of interaction. But on social media, and even when you're sat next to people in the ground, it becomes a little bit more visceral and raw, and you're just basically you're kind of shouting out what you want them to do, as if you could magic that on the pitch, because you're frustrated. And a lot of it isn't based in the reality of, well, what is actually happening here? Is it Postecoglou hasn't got another dimension? I mean, the thing that made me laugh at halftime was, it ain't the SPL, mate, which is what one of the guys kind of yelled, Anthony. I mean, I don't know if he listens to this, but... And it's a harsh way to look at it. It's a harsh way to just suddenly decide, well, Postecoglou's hit his ceiling. He's not going to be able to do anything more than what he's been able to produce now. And we know that's bollocks. And we also know that, I mean, we don't know it's bollocks, but we know that everything that's been given to us thus far, externally, in terms of what the club are doing and what Angie's saying and doing and how the players have responded and how we've responded to all of it, the good and the bad, there's enough there to know that it's not comparable to Conte, which I have seen people talk about. It's not comparable to, you know, this narrative around, well, the only difference between Ange football and Conte football is, and it's like, mate, are you really saying that out loud? Because there's a thousand...
It's simply untrue, isn't it? It's not true.
It's a cartoon reaction. And again, I'm policing myself here. Like, everybody's, this is the beauty of football. We watch the same thing. We just see different things. And the way we process it is completely different from one person to the next. Like, you mentioned Ricky and Flav and the Fighting Cock Lads. There's a bit of, I'd say, banter, which is not a word I'm fond of, but, you know, it's the only way to describe it, that we're very self-deprecating in what we say. And one or two have shared their... I think Callum posted something on Twitter that got a few reactions. It's just his way of dealing with it. And if you have a conversation with Callum, or he'll talk to you about what's wrong. He'll critique the things that we're seeing. And they're almost like little placeholders. They're little anchor points. Because what we're doing is, well, here's a red flag. Here's another red flag. Here's another red flag. Okay, that's not... They're possibly temporary. They're not permanent, but we need growth. And growth comes with more games, and it comes with more signings. And maybe we have hit our capacity in certain areas because we do need to upgrade certain players, or we need to change certain things, or we need to rotate more. So in the grand scheme of things, go on.
I was going to ask you, like, just on that, just to jump in there, what is your take on, like, where the issue is right now?
Well, look,
just
to answer quickly, I'm probably in the middle of A and B, obviously being a happy clapper and a white knight, right? Like, I think both statements are true. I'm happy. It has been a decent start. You look at our league position. I honestly was fearful for this season. I thought, even though I'd bought into Postecoglou a little bit earlier than I imagined I would because of the way that he was presenting himself in pressers, I thought seventh, eighth, maybe. Like, it might take us a while to get going. Are we going to gel? And all these other questions. And obviously, what Postecoglou has proved is that we actually do have a good squad of players, just a first team rather than a squad, actually. And that's and he's proven that a good forward-thinking manager can get something out of them. And I guess that's where the frustration creeps in, because So football fans are probably thinking we can do a lot better than we have been doing. But I think that's unfair for 8-9 months into his tenure. So I'm happy and I'm content. And I'm disappointed because there's an opportunity there as well, right? But every team that's above us is way ahead of us in terms of their builds, you know. And I think we also need to be... I mean, this is controversial, right? Because I'll probably get some ag off the back of this, but I think some of the petulance, some of that entitlement that I have seen, which is always followed up with, well, I've been patient for 20 years. And it's like, okay, I get what you're saying, mate, but the last 20 years, lack of trophies, yes, let's stop pretending the last 20 years have been shit, because we've seen some of the best players we've ever seen play in a Spurs shirt, and we've seen some of the best teams we've ever seen in the modern generation. Fair enough, we haven't followed up on that, and that is definitely frustrating. But in the context of the last four seasons, the club making really bad decisions, they've made a good one. I think it's really petulant for us to turn on the best thing that we've had appointment wise for a long, long time and be knee jerky. As for why it's, I think it's lots of different things. I just think, I know it's an excuse. It sounds like an excuse at this point. I think the suspensions, the international duty, the injuries, the fact that we're not going to see prime Bentancur, I hope, you know, if we do, until next season. I think Maddison is only just coming back. I think against Palace, he looked like Maddison of old. I think, obviously, Saar... is someone I would start to be fair, because of the way that he carries the ball forward. I think there's one or two other players as well who are just lacking something, and it's a collective lack of synergy as well. And I think it's just a season of tests, right? It's just a season of these little questions, pockets of form. We win games, but we're not convincing. But when we play our football, it's like a teaser trailer, and you're thinking, that could be a box office smash. So there's enough positives in amongst it all to know that I just have to suck it up. And if we finish fifth, it'd be disappointing because it feels like fourth is gettable. But the reality will be we're not good enough to finish fourth this season. And we go from there. And I don't want to mention them too often, but you look at the scumbags over in the swamp. And you look at the first two seasons. I mean, they won an FA Cup, and you got a bit of credit for that during, I think, the COVID season. But they took ages to click. They took ages for their fans to understand what he was trying to do. And I think sometimes with Spurs fans, I think because of what has happened to us with bad decision making, I think we're very quick to just give in or to just think, well, it's not working. And I think we should be more accountable as a fan base. You know, a lot of discussions about the atmosphere in recent games. I think we got behind the team when the team got behind the game and started forcing something to happen. And I think that's always been the case, I think, with modern fans, and especially Spurs fans. So I can't really answer the question, which makes for an interesting pod. But
I think sort of projecting... my own sort of opinion onto it, but just some different people I've spoken to around this, of, you know, very varying different sort of persuasions on Tottenham at large and Tottenham right now. It feels like at the start of the season, we all, you know, we got swept up in the form, we got swept up in the way in which we were playing football, the way we were sort of dispatching teams, how quickly it all seemed to come together. Everything just kind of fell into place, right? Destiny Adogie was a rookie, but suddenly, wow, okay, this kid's arrived. You know, he's unbelievable. James Maddison always carried a bit of a risk in the respect that he's a great, great player. Everyone sees how good he is on his day, but why have none of the big teams ever had a punt on him? Oh, wait, hang on. We were right. We were right in taking the punt on him. He looks unbelievable. And do you know what I mean? Vicario, this kind of unknown keeper, had a whiffy sort of debut in that preseason friendly where we thought, oh, God, what have we done? Suddenly looked unbelievable. So it felt like suddenly all these different pieces had sort of fallen into place. And I didn't feel that we were the best team in the country. You know, it's all quite obviously Manchester City. Liverpool are very, very good. As you say, that lot of the Swamp, very, very good. But there was a certain kind of, if I can say it, magic to what we were doing, right? We'd brought in this, you know, mercurial manager, if you like, this guy who gets results playing football the Tottenham way, and suddenly we were doing that, and it felt like it had all fallen into pieces, fallen into place. And
Freudian.
Yeah. And there was something there where it was just like, yes, academically, rationally, Spurs shouldn't be doing anything this year, but maybe actually this, after Conte, after Mourinho, after Kane leaving, maybe actually now suddenly this is when we just get that story, like Leverkusen are getting now. You know, Leverkusen in Bundesliga, who are stopping Harry Kane from just walking his way to a trophy. Leverkusen never won the Bundesliga. They've always been that kind of Tottenham-y team in Germany. Close but no cigar, zero trophies, ha 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 ha. Let's all make fun of them. It just seems to have just kind of clicked for them. They got in that Xavi Alonso. He's got them knocking the ball about nicely. They don't have the best team, but they've got an amazing spirit and they're just going for it. And it sort of felt like Spurs, maybe we'll just have that Leicester. You know, maybe we'll be the Leicester this year and we'll just do it when nobody was really expecting us to. And then we can all just kind of retire. And since that, I mean, the bubble was initially burst through just the coldest of cold kind of rational reality checks of just our best players. After I'd just done a podcast with Jamie Weir, and we were sort of saying before that, God, you know what? It was just before Chelsea. This is looking all a bit too good to be true. We're playing so well. And if we can just get that luck of basically not suffering any injuries to our best players, Jesus, maybe this
is your fault then.
Yeah. Maybe this could be it. And then, like I say, we had that cold reality check of our best players getting injured, of people going off for international break. And I think some of the sort of feeling, at least for me, just a bit of a haze, a bit of a cloud over things right now are, I look at Liverpool, right? I look at a team who, whatever, I know their fans are insufferable. I know Jurgen Klopp is a throbber and all this type of thing. But under him, they have been one of the best Premier League sides I've ever seen. I honestly believe it. I think they've been absolutely unbelievable. You know, Mo Salah has been ridiculous. Mane was, well, they still had him, absolutely ridiculous. You know, he had Jordan Henderson playing at a level that I don't think anybody thought Jordan Henderson was anywhere near capable of doing. And they have that narrative behind them, you know, the Anfield sort of, you know, the hymn that they sing every single bloody game, "You'll Never Walk Alone." They have, you know, vast sort of sections of the media who are all kind of rooting for them. And yet, and I like, please don't take this the wrong way when I say this, but under him, this unbelievable side, this really a once in a generation, maybe even a once in a lifetime team, has only managed to win the Premier League once. And they should have won it. They genuinely, under him, they should have won it three. Any other era, they would have won it three times, maybe at least.
Yeah.
And when I look at the level they've gotten to, I look at how incredible they've been. To only get it over the line once.
It's mad.
It brings into kind of sharp focus just how difficult it is. And I know Pep Guardiola's not going to be there forever. Empires wax and wane. Manchester City won't be as imperious as they currently are. But still, I think the benchmark has been set now in this country as to the level that you need to be playing at to win the league, to have actual huge success. And that's really, really difficult. And we know all the other variables that come into play when it comes to Tottenham. We know the way you and I have spoken about this plenty of times. We can talk about it being a club DNA, or we can talk about the fact that, you know, everybody is just so emboldened coming to Tottenham because the whole narrative is always Tottenham are shit. Tottenham will slip up. Tottenham will mess up, you know, give them the gun and they'll shoot themselves type thing. So we don't know how much all of this stuff plays into it. But my point is basically is that we did all get swept up in this sort of fairy tale that Spurs might do something. It might have all just fallen into place for us right now. And suddenly, once we've been hit with the reality of what life in the Premier League is actually like, how hard, how difficult, how unendingly, like grindingly difficult it is in the Premier League to even stay. I mean, look, we're slipping away from even Aston Villa. And if you see these like league tables of the past 10 games or whatever, we've been doing really well. But it's so competitive. It's so difficult that you sort of think, well, we've tried the Conte route, we're trying the Andrew. I know it's still early days, but is the reality of this going to be, we've got our Tottenham back, we're playing some nice football and it's great and we can enjoy the match day and all that type of stuff. But in that Icarus-like fashion that we've spoken about, under Pochettino, we kind of entered into an uncomfortable territory that Tottenham hadn't been in since the 60s, let's be honest, and of... maybe we can, I guess maybe the 80s, but I wasn't there to see it, so people might...
Yeah, all right, I'd have to have a little dig at old man Spooky.
But in terms of just being really actually close to being a serious team, not kind of good old Tottenham, the lads have brought home the FA Cup, which is great in itself, but do you know what I mean? Like, as in being an actual, like, fuck, Spurs are good. Spurs might win the Premier League. Spurs might win the Champions League. And... That's kind of where our ceiling's been set now. Naturally, human beings, that's why we fly into space. That's why we do all the things that we do, because we are wired to do better. We always are. And unfortunately now for Spurs, the step better is winning the Premier League or winning the Champions League. Even so much as if we won the FA Cup, it'd be great, but we would still be like, I still want to win the Premier League, though. And that's just where we find ourselves, mate. And, you know...
That is so spot on, everything that you said. And, like, something that I've always repeated is that, you know, Tottenham's failure is that we're failing at the very highest level, you know. The meme narrative around, Tottenham have bottled it and all this stuff. It is bollocks, because you're talking about a team that's consistently been in amongst it. Obviously not good enough to really puncture that top tier of the Premier League. But also, if you put everything into context, it feels like an impossible mission to be able to do that. But you have to endeavour. You have to have the cutthroat energy to be able, because you need to be relentless in everything that you do, has to be for that ambition to play out. And one criticism that everybody can agree on, aimed at the club, is that we haven't really been that type of football club at our core. We've done everything right, you could argue, just in terms of all the things that have no relevance to my experience of Tottenham and your experience and everyone else's experience, but all the financial aspects, the rebuilding the stadium, all the revenue stuff, that's all great. But now that should be a conduit, a pipeline to feed into our ambitions on the pitch. And that's obviously the big thing around the chairman and the board and the board of directors and everything else. They have failed us. There's no doubt in that, you know. You still won't find me protesting outside the club shop. It's ironic that I agree with that sentiment, and they don't. And often get accused of being pro Levy. I'm not anything. I'm pro Tottenham. I want Tottenham to do well.
Pro Levy. It's so mad, isn't it? Like, just because you don't want to like be shouting and screaming and foaming at the mouth, pro Levy. What even is pro Levy like?
I'm at the point now where I don't have the energy for that anymore either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I do get back on Twitter, if anyone from that side wants to have a discussion with me, then I'll have a discussion with them. But I'm not going to go after these people anymore because it's boring. And I think my point of you need to keep your attendance up. You need to be constant. And they're not, because lo and behold, we're doing well. You know, arguably we're still doing well now, and no one's protesting. No one's there. And to make your identity about having to hate the football club means that every result, everything that's happening within the club has to then kind of bounce off you and back towards the chairman. And you're not making it about your experience supporting Spurs. You know, you can still support Spurs and be happy, etc., and still have grievances about what the club are doing. And it's that side of it where I think we're very fragile as a fan base. Like, no one can be asked to moan to that degree when things are doing, because naturally you're happy because the football is fundamentally the most important thing of the experience. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. To go back to what you're saying.
Did you see that Bundesliga capo on the...
Oh, amazing. Yeah, can you imagine like what any given character off Twitter like jumping onto the pitch and then just having a go at our players? That would be...
It just couldn't happen here, though.
Culturally, it's impossible.
There's a whole, like, head over the parapet thing. We don't, you know, what is it, trimming off the tall flowers and stuff, isn't it, that we...
Yeah, it's...
Do in the UK.
You know, it's not like we're an island, aren't we? We really are. We really have our own way of doing things, and it's very much by the letter of the law. We can't get that right.
But just being really resentful of doing that as well, you know, letting that eat us up inside. I'm going to follow these rules, but I'm really, really unhappy about it.
That's basically the tagline for this country with most things. But yeah, to go back to what you're saying, so which I forgot now. What were you saying? Like, you know, the experience of watching Spurs and following Spurs and the demands around those expectations. You know, you have to consider what we're up against, and then so it's like, how do you get ahead of Manchester City when Liverpool had the template for that and only beat them once, you know, in doing so. So it's, you know, we have to consider that what we're asking the club to do is also incredibly difficult. However, I keep saying it, and I'm sure most people will agree, be prepared to be in a position where you can take advantage of a flux in the Premier League, because there's cycles. You know, you could argue City, it's bonkers, right? They're going through a bit of a cycle themselves because they won everything last season. So obviously they have to kind of recalibrate their desire to kind of repeat, you know, and players at that elite level have an elite man manager to kind of help them through that. I mean, it's a great privileged way of living your footballing life as a fan or as a player. But they're having a little bit of a dip, just a little bit of a dip, but they're still probably going to win the league if Liverpool don't stay ahead of them. So we are having to catch up, which we've done, and it's taken us a long, long time, which is where people are frustrated, because people believe, Spurs fans believe, we could have done more. And I'd say in moments, we probably could have done a lot more. We didn't. We're in a very good position now financially. An unbelievable position, and we're doing a lot of things right in the space of a summer. We're appointing the right people in the infrastructure, where the way the academy is spoken about, the way the football that's being played resonates through every kind of level. We're tethered. Everything's tethered to everything, and we're tethered to the players. And there's a belief within it all that kind of gels it all together. And that's a good starting point. But you're right. The energy that it takes, like if Postecoglou 2 or 3 seasons in is still trying to figure things out, would the right thing for the club at that point be to replace him, to persist with their ambition to make it about Tottenham being the very best football club in the country? So there's these things that are very easy to knee-jerk towards because you think change is good. But there's also this thing around as the kids would say, let them cook. Because in the past, we have burnt down the kitchen, we have used the wrong ingredients, we have got the flavouring wrong and blah, 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 and giving everyone food poisoning. Like, in this instance, it's actually okay with all the context of everything to say, let's just wait. Just wait. There's no reason for finality. Yes, we can be critical. Yes, we can, and we can talk about, like, why are we struggling with the low block? What is it? Is it personnel? Is it a collective lack of synergy, and the team have to reboot? Is it Postecoglou trying to work out the Premier League and understanding the level that he's at now? These questions don't get answered after a Saturday afternoon. They get answered after a dozen Saturday afternoons. So it's boring, man. We have this conversation all the time in the Beehive and in the pubs before the game. Like, if you don't have like a snappy opinion about something, people are not going to want to listen to a podcast. Like, you have to say something that, and I'm not saying say something performative like Rory does for his Chelsea followers, right? Rory Jennings. But say something that might trigger discussion and a debate, and we just, as we go along, we just have to chronicle everything as we go along. And I think so far, Postecoglou, to his credit, every little bump in the road that we've had, he's managed it almost perfectly, in my opinion, in terms of how he talks about it and then what we actually do on the pitch. Granted, I might have the order wrong here, but let's say Brentford and Brighton and Wolves. I mean, two of those games we win, but we don't win very convincingly. Wolves, we come completely unstuck. And then Palace, we actually pull it back and prove, well, do you know what? We can be snappy. We can counter. We can play with urgency. Because that was the problem on Saturday, right? It was very methodical. Waiting for Palace to get everyone behind the ball, and then we weren't able to break them. But then in the second half, when the game opened a little bit, it was like bang, bang, bang. It was pace and urgency, and it was punishing. I mean, can you see the fixing amongst it all? I mean, I know you're not like you're not one of the nerds, so I don't expect you to go too analytical with it. Have I completely lost you, Jack? I think Jack has jumped out a window. Let me just find out where he's at. And you're yeah, back. Yeah, I thought I lost you for a second,
no,
mate.
I could hear you all the time. I was just talking away and then...
No. Nothing was coming through, mate. So...
The point I was going to just make is that we... I felt that against most of the teams we play, Wolves, Palace, Brighton, let's focus on the Palace game in particular. It just felt all very predictable, everything that we were doing. We just kept lumping it out to the wings, and they just contained that very easily. And then it kind of started to venture into the realms of pass it Madison, see what he can do with it, which is what we often used to do with Harry Kane when we got desperate in the past few years. For me, I go on about him all the time, and I'm sure it annoys certain people or whatever, but for me, Pape Matar just has to start games for Tottenham.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know if it's true or not. Somebody kind of bit back at me on Twitter saying he's actually got a back problem, so maybe Ange knows a bit more than you. I haven't seen Pape Matar having a back problem anywhere else, so maybe this is something somebody read on Reddit or whatever. I don't know. If it's not an if it is he's been rested because of an injury, fine, fair enough. I'll hold my hands up to that.
I think not to kind of annoy you even more now. I'm sure Ange might have mentioned this in the presser.
Really after fair.
I think so.
It mainly comes from because Ange does have form. He does have form with Sarr. I think his decision making with Sarr at times is quite bizarre. Taking him off and all that type of stuff. And again, I do totally understand he's privy to a lot more than I am. He trains with him. He knows the lad. He works with him
day
in, day out. All I can do is provide my, you know, man on the street, fan in the pub type opinion, which is Sarr is just, when I watch Tottenham play with Sarr and without Sarr, are a completely different beast, because he is pretty much, other than Maddison, who has not been very well, I think, for a while. No fault of his own, you know, he's been injured and he's never really had an injury like that before.
Yeah.
I just think we don't have anyone else that can carry a ball like Sarr can. I just think he's too important to us.
And yeah, agreed.
You were tiptoeing around the subject a bit earlier. You know, we sort of are getting to that we need to talk about Rodrigo Bentancur moment, I think.
You think so?
Not that I think he's a bad player. I think he's a wonderful, wonderful footballer.
But
he has had a succession of very serious, very bad injuries.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it might take him a bit of time to come back from those. However,
he might not
come back from those. Yeah. And that would be understandable, and that happens to a lot of players, because I would say he is miles off it. I think he's absolutely miles off it, and I don't think he's looked particularly good at all in any games that he's come back and played in. And I'm not digging him out per se. I think he's a wonderful, wonderful player, and I would love to have him back at his very best. But we know what those type of injuries do to players. ACLs are horrible, you know? Very few players come back from those as good as, you know, and really, I can only think of like absolutely freak footballers who have ever really come back from horrible injuries. Let's say, you know, this is one for the kids, Henrik Larsson. Think about all the horrific injuries he had, yet he seemed to manage to keep coming back and just be an unbelievable player. But I can't really think of many players that come back from really big injuries. We saw what it did to Sandro, for example. You know, yeah. And absolutely, I don't think it was an ACL with him, but he had a
No, it wasn't. But we're kind of cursed with those. It's usually defensive midfield players, right? Yeah. I don't know whether Bentancur really is classed as a defensive midfield
Palacios,
player, but
I think another.
Yeah, Palacios.
His brother. That was quite sad. Actually, I think he never really sort of came back.
Yeah, Wanyama.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably more in amongst it all. And this is the tricky thing. I think we won't really know until next season. Do you know what I'm saying?
No.
But psychologically, let alone the kind of the mental, the physical aspect of returning from two big injuries, but psychologically and mentally, you know, you can't play with the fear that you might get another one. And maybe that's something, maybe. Again, I'm just, same as you, just a Tottenham supporter chatting. You know, maybe that's impacting the way that he's applying himself in games. I can't remember who it was that spoke about this, but that would be the wrong way to go around it. I'm sure he has, you know, the kind of the medical staff and the kind of the medical science people at the club and whoever else advising him that you just have to get on with it as if you've never had an injury, and then just build up your form and build up your touch and your sharpness and whatever else. I do think if you go way back to when we first found out about how long he'd be out for, I think most people thought, oh yeah, he'd be back during the course of this season, but he won't be back until next season. However, it's something again to kind of caveat and you know, are we going to need to look at another midfielder potentially? Are we going to be looking at another sort of a young superstar to come in, or perhaps a ready-made midfielder, especially with European football? So there's story arcs everywhere.
We really need that, you know, Declan Rice, Rodri, all action, just sort of beast of a midfielder. Do you know what I mean? I mean, who doesn't need a Rodri? I know it's a pretty obvious, but I'm talking about a player in that mold that I don't know if Bissouma's actually...
he is that player. Bissouma, obviously we kind of know what he can produce when he's on it, but he needs to be consistent and have the composure and
since he's come back.
He quietly better, I think, in the last game, but yeah, he's not the player that we know he can be, right? And again, it's a very positive white knight kind of perspective for me to say just wait. Obviously, yeah, at some point, how long do we wait for? You know, is it a case that this season has been messy, but we've done all right considering the mess, and a lot of it is not so much self-inflicted, but things that we'll be able to manage better over the course of the next season or two, because a lot of it is down to fitness and conditioning, right, and training, and what Postecoglou is asking for the players. And then we had the one game a week that we thought would be an advantage, but because we haven't got this super squad of players like Chelsea had under Conte, it's actually been a detriment to us because we've needed more games. Obviously, don't get knocked out the cups, Postecoglou, mate. Mm-hmm. But there's things that need fine-tuning, and I think I'm always going to be in this position. I'm not overcommitting, by the way. I'm not saying back Postecoglou with blind faith. I'm saying there's enough in there to back him with your eyes open, and it's way too early for anyone. Just what the first time we have a bit of a bump, and it's barely a bump, that people are going to start questioning things and start talking about, well, he's not giving us enough, we're going to need... It feels like a discussion that isn't really necessary at this point. Talk about critique and talk about the low block conundrum, because we're going to get that a lot. You know, teams know what to expect from us. They're not going to let us play football. So then we have to find a different, you know, a different way to answer those questions. And then, you know, you got, do we need fullback replacements for Porro and Destiny? Do we need another creative midfielder to rotate with Maddison? There's a lot of missing pieces. And this is where the club, with all that money, with all that wealth, and I actually do have faith in the way they're working with Postecoglou. It feels like there's an actual... they believe in him and he believes in the club. And they're signing players that he wants and needs, and the profile matches the kind of the philosophy that this club want to be playing towards. We need to keep that energy up to be able to produce the goods. So I mean, I'm happy, right? It doesn't mean that there isn't some frustration in amongst it. I think the majority at the game as well, I think, are probably okay. I think considering what we've had to endure in the last few seasons, I think you could also argue anything is better than that. And perhaps people are just checking themselves and making sure that we're not exaggerating what we're seeing. But when you do look at the table and you do look at the performances and you do look at the squad and the players and you do look at the pockets of football that we've played this season that have been incredibly good, we just have to find... we're kind of missing a spark at the minute. We just need to reignite it, I think, and finish strongly and just have a really good summer window. I mean, again, nothing insightful about those statements. Very obvious things to say, but that basically is what's needed, you know. I haven't lost you again, mate. You're still there.
No,
yeah.
No. Yep.
I'm just looking...
taking it in.
I'm just looking at the time. Let's... Well, we're going to stop there. We'll stop the normal podcast there. You've had your 15 minutes. Patreon patrons will get the extra stuff, because I want to go back to some of the key points from the Palace game. I want to talk about Brennan Johnson. I'm interested to know what you think of his particular story arc. Timo Werner, should we sign him? 50 million quid seems like a no-brainer, but you know, there's conversations to be had there. And one or two other little bits and pieces. So if you want to listen to me and Jack continue this discussion, go to patreon.com/spookyinpurgatory. You know this by now. I keep having to repeat this at the end of every episode. I'm not going to do it going forward. You know where I'm at. Support me if you want to support me. If you don't, keep downloading this podcast on all your favorite pod apps, because it still helps. So much love. Catch you on the next one. Jack, you can say goodbye to the freeloaders if you want.
Bye-bye, freeloaders.
All right, done.